Welcome, everyone, to RB1 : A Fantasy Football Podcast, part of the Big Teams Podcast Channel. I am your humble host, the once conducted, the now completely dead Devin Funchess-hype train, rom-com aficionado, worshiper of N'Keal Harry and Damian Harris, truther, the old married guy, Pete Rogers. And I am joined by some of the guys. We got DK Metcalf's number one admirer, doubter of Juju Smith-Schuster, proponent for a line of Jon Snow hair products. You heard it here first. Resident old man Clark Barnes. And the biggest 49ers fan you know, Arya Stark, is a spirit animal. The only man who hates Larry Fitzgerald, the fit end of what scientists lovingly call, quote, facts. The ginger normal man, Nick Botiford. Guys, how are we doing today?
Good, man. How you doing?
Doing great, Pete.
I'm good. I wanted to start the show with a moment of silence, though, for Clark and for Hunter Henry, who just can't stay healthy.
Yeah.
It's a bummer. You hate to see a career just get completely derailed by injury. In a career, I mean, whenever that happens, it's terrible. But especially when it happens to someone who is very promising. I mean, he had 8 touchdowns his rookie year, which was only 4 years ago, and he just hasn't managed to stay healthy. He's been he tore his ACL, he's had knee problems, and now he just broke his fibula, I think, or fractured it.
It's a tibial plateau.
Yep. Yeah, so I think that's what happened to J.J. Watt last year. It's the part of your leg bone where another bone sits atop of, and so it's a pretty crummy thing, if I've got that.
That sounds awful. So, pour some out, and moment of silence to Hunter Henry. We hope you get better, and we hope that you are able to move past all these injuries and still have a professional NFL career. Or, if you want to make the decision, maybe try your hand at something else. I don't know.
Get into podcasting. We have an opening for former Chargers tight ends. It's a pretty specific job rec.
But it's there. We're looking for it. We promise we can pay.
Period. 1%. We can pay. We're not going to discuss salary on the air because that's uncouth, but give us a call.
We can pay.
He and Heath can split during the tight end rankings.
Oh, there you go. Ooh, I wonder how good a player of their position would be able to do fantasy rankings. Like, how good of a sense do you think other wide receivers and running backs have of their compadres, I guess, is the only
former one. Players seem to be very hit and miss as
yeah, so, that's true.
I don't know.
They don't really have the best track record of being able to predict things. I wonder if it's better if you do it the flip side. Like, are cornerbacks really good at wide receiver rankings and are linebackers really good at running back rankings? Who knows? I don't know. I just remember Jalen Ramsey's. Well, I guess he did a quarterback ranking, which was spot on. Let's just say
we should try to get him to do that again, and then just have that also. Like, we can do on my quarterback rankings, we can do Jalen Ramsey's quarterback rankings, like right next to it. Now that we have all these players that are going to co-rank with us, anyway.
Right. Well, I mean, Jalen Ramsey and this podcast go way back. We're very tight. So we'll just hit him up. Shouldn't be a problem. Jalen, let us know when you're available. I know you've got something this weekend, but maybe sometime during the week we could figure out your rankings. Awesome. Well, week 2 is just around the corner. It's in fact going to be starting when you are listening to this podcast. And so, as per tradition, it's time to do our week 2 starts and sits. We're going to start with you, Clark. Clark, what game are you interested in? What are you talking about? Who you got? Who you like?
So I think I'm going to start with Tampa Bay and Carolina. I watched the Tampa Bay San Francisco game twice because I was so confused by the box score. I just had to understand what was going on. And I'm in no better spot now to understand what's going on. I think Raheem Mostert is a start if you are desperate at running back. None of the San Francisco running backs really differentiated themselves in the game against the Buccaneers. Tevin Coleman got hurt. I've been riding the Matt Breida hype train all offseason, and he looked okay. Everybody else looked okay, and Mostert looks like a bruiser. So he's the start for me. I watched the Carolina game. That was fun. The Boo Birds were out early in Carolina this week. So I guess a lot of good tailgating going on. Maybe people didn't appreciate Cam Newton's old mother hen outfits that they knew were coming at the end of the game. But I can't really pick a good sit for this one. I think we're maybe O.J. Howard. Cameron Brate still continued to be the red zone target. He had 2 touchdowns called back, and O.J. Howard wasn't even getting a sniff in the red zone. So I would sit O.J. Howard, I guess.
Yeah.
I broke the games down. I forgot we were doing start sit, so kind of doing this on the fly.
So, pivoting off that admission, OJ Howard is really scary to me. I've got him in a couple leagues, and he's absolutely a tight end who, if you drafted, you expected to be getting like a sneaky top three guy who's going to overtake Zach Ertz. And Jameis Winston just, I don't know, guys.
Cameron Brate must have something on Jameis. Like maybe he has an admission of more crab legs or something like that, because Jameis just does not look OJ Howard's way. It is Cameron Brate or bus at the tight end position.
He threw a pass to Howard over the middle, just a short gain, and it was a rocket pass. I thought he could have taken a little bit off it, but went right through OJ Howard's hands and was intercepted. So Howard didn't do himself any favors.
Yeah, that's fair.
But anyway, I think unless you were fortunate enough to run out and grab like TJ Hawkinson off the waiver wire if he was available, or you know, Darren Waller.
Your boy got TJ Hawk. TJ
Kyle Rudolph, baby, right?
Right, or Kyle Rudolph. I think you're rolling with Howard, although it's not start him, but it's one of those like, God damn, I wish I could sit him.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have to, you could make a worse decision because he's still incredibly athletic, but the no touchdown possibility is scary.
If you have OJ Howard, chances are Mark Andrews is available in your league. Get Mark Andrews, start Mark Andrews.
And boy, I know this isn't, but boy, did Christian McCaffrey look
Christian
exactly
McCaffrey.
Like we thought Christian McCaffrey was going to look. Oh,
I'm telling you, man, that thousand season is coming for him, and I'm going to look like a goddamn genius when it happens. It's happening. Don't question me. Nick, what game are you what's the first game you're looking at?
Sorry, I'm recovering from you claiming ownership of calling Christian McCaffrey's thousand.
No, everyone. I mean, this was the most telegraphed thing ever.
I'm sorry. I haven't recorded on this podcast thousand and thousand for Christian, and y'all were like, well, that's okay. That's cool. So yeah, oh, you're damn right, I'm gonna live and die by this.
Good. Never mind. Disregard my comment. Take that, Pete.
All right, so we're going to get started with Arizona at Baltimore. I was getting real nervous because I left literally every draft with Kyler Murray. And I was reading through Josh Schermsmeyer's by-low air yards model, and something stood out to me. Christian Kirk came in with the highest expected points sort of left on the field in the by-low model. And something that Schermsmeyer added to this was the fact that I got it right here. The Ravens secondary is banged up after losing cornerback Jimmy Smith knee in week one and cornerback Tavon Young neck. I believe that happened in August. So although, you know, the rest of their defense is really good, I am now much more confident in rolling out weapons in the Arizona passing game. Christian Kirk, I think he was on the field for like 90% of the snaps. Fitzgerald is obviously the baller, and I hate him, and that made me so mad. But I'm just playing the part, Clark.
No, you're not. Don't lie. Don't lie, Nick.
God, he makes. I actually don't like him for his views on John McCain, but that we can leave that. Anyway, but no, I'd still. I think that Christian Kirk is definitely of the buy low variety, and I would still trust Kyler Murray, even though this is a trial by fire.
I like that call. The thing that I didn't like about the Arizona Cardinals hype this summer is that it just got way out of hand. I think we can still be excited about the Cardinals taking a huge step forward without projecting them to win 9 games and without projecting Kyler Murray to be the best quarterback to ever play the game. There's still a lot of room in there for him to be serviceable and support someone who I think is super talented in Christian Kirk and, of course, Larry Fitzgerald.
I think I wanted to point out that this, again, how good we are at our jobs. Last week, start and sit. Clark said to sit Kyler Murray, and Nick said to start Kyler Murray. Man, first half Kyler Murray was sittable. Second half Kyler Murray was startable. We fucking nailed it. Good for us. Hit nail on the head. You couldn't have asked for a better prediction than what we just gave.
Did you get to watch overtime in that game?
No, I watched up and through the middle of the third, then I was like, okay, well, this doesn't seem fun anymore. And then of course, Kyler goes off.
He looked so good. His accuracy was amazing as the game
looked. I was watching the highlights, and he did look a lot better, a lot more comfortable, and they were finally getting people open and giving him some mild protection. I think if you are like you, Nick, and you came away from most drafts with Kyler Murray, do not panic. I think he is still just getting his feet wet in the NFL, and we saw when he gets comfortable how good he can be. So like I don't think that what we saw in the first half of the Lions game is like an indicator that, oh shit, sell all your Kyler Murray.
Yeah. Final point on this game. I'm blanking on the exact number, but Adam Levitan was tracking the personnel groupings, and they ran out of four receiver sets. Like, I think it was over 80% of the time, or maybe it was over 70% of the time. The league high last year on the season was like 23. For the rest of the NFL. So they are fully committed to air raid. They will have two fully functioning slot receivers on the field at all times.
Yeah. Cool. All right. First game I'm going to talk about is the Bears playing the Broncos. And the guy I'm going to talk about is Philip Lindsay. Sit him this week. He played just four snaps more than Royce Freeman against the Raiders. And Freeman did more with his touches despite having less. Obviously, the Bears defense looks like it is picked up right where it left off last season. I also think, and the main reason I picked Philip Lindsay to talk about that I wanted to bring him up is because I think he is someone who you should think about selling sooner rather than later. I think you should try to move him while people still think that he is the clear starter of the backfield, that people still have the memory of what his rookie year looked like. Just because what the Broncos came out and showed us against the Raiders was that this is a split backfield. This is going to be what they've been saying all offseason, which is Royce Freeman, their third round pick, is going to get, you know, equal amount of touches as their undrafted rookie or undrafted running back, Philip Lindsay. And I think a lot of people chose to ignore that or just overlooked it and drafted Philip Lindsay as the clear-cut RB1 in Denver. I don't think that's true anymore. So I think before we see like three games worth of Philip Lindsay not being the RB1 in Denver, sell him. Sell him while he's at least going to get you something decent in return.
Yeah, I like it. One of my favorite analysts, Cecil Lammy, does some radio for the Broncos, and he was talking about how this is definitely going to be a split backfield and Royce Freeman is probably going to be the workhorse here. But something else he's also said that I think we saw play out in the first game is that the Broncos want to score 21 points a game. They want to slow the game down. They want to rely on their defense. They want to run. And they're hoping to get to 21. And when you run an offense like that, there's just not going to be a ton to go around. I think both of these backs are going to have good games throughout the season. But we're in one of those situations where if you got Freeman cheap, like me, then he's your spot starter flex guy once the bye weeks come around. You're hoping for that touchdown. But if you got Lindsay, it's just going to be tough to pick out what games he's going to look good in, which will be like, you know, four or five for sure. And we have no idea what they'll be.
Right. Likely you drafted him as your RB2 or your like permanent flex spot, and he's not going to be that for you. So best to trade him when people think that that's still what his value is.
So my name is Nick Waterford, and I endorse Pete's message. If you go back and check out my Denver Broncos preview, I was hammering the table, pass on Lindsay early, go get Royce Freeman late. John Daigle was talking about it on the Roto-World podcast today that I think it was Lindsay ran 17 routes, Freeman ran 16. He doesn't even have the edge in the passing game. Right. He got a couple more targets, but they're being used in the same capacity. And Freeman, I think he had like 5.6 yards a carry.
He looked good,
really well, and he did. He looked really good. He was in there for pass in a number of pass protection situations. And the nice thing is, if you do have him, you got him really late. You're not counting on him to be a flex. So this week against Chicago, you can bench him.
Right,
it's okay. You likely have him on your squad to be a rotational guy. So right on. Good work.
Amen. Amen. Moving on, Clark. What's the second game you're talking about?
So I've got the absolute worst team in the league who are just jerks, the New Orleans Saints, against the I'm glad you lost to them and you got your stupid team got everything that it deserved last year, Los Angeles Rams. New Orleans is in like wonderfully for fantasy, wonderfully predictable. We knew exactly what was going to happen in New Orleans, and we saw that in week one. So if you drafted Latavius Murray, or, you know, then he's a start. You know, that was proven out last week. Everybody else that you drafted to start for the Saints, you're starting again. For the Rams, the start is start Brandon Cooks, guys. I know he had a bad game week one, but he drew a couple of pass interference penalties. They were holding him all game, and there were plays designed to go to him. So it was just a bad game for Brandon Cooks. Don't worry, start Brandon Cooks. And then I'm doing another start. Malcolm Brown, he needs to be your flex. Todd Gurley is not going away, but we're talking about the Denver Broncos offense not really having enough to comfortably support two running backs. The LA Rams offense absolutely has enough to start two running backs. I don't think you should expect two touchdowns out of Malcolm Brown each week, but you should absolutely expect a speak of the devil kind of Latavius Murray role out of Malcolm Brown each week. So if you're hurting at running back, Brown is a really great start going against New Orleans, who had some trouble making stops on defense against the Super Bowl bound Houston Texans. I hate you, New Orleans.
Never underestimate the narrative of a revenge game. Brandon Cooks. I'm just saying. Brandon Cooks would love to just continuously put revenge on the Saints. I'm here for
it. Yeah, foreshadowing. We're going to have some more revenge game talk a little later on. But something that I thought was interesting in this was that Ted Ginn Jr. was on the field for 74% of the snaps. And while I would not advise you play him when they are playing away from the Superdome, he is a guy who is liable to pop off in your flex spot when they are playing at home. He had 7 catches for, I think it was 101 yards. Thank you, Canal Street Chronicles.
Clark would like this discussion to stop.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, keep your eye on Ted Ginn. But Latavius, if you started him, you're super happy with that.
Yeah.
Definitely. So Nick and I are slacking back and forth late Monday night, and, you know, it's all very friendly and nice. And then what's his name? That jerk, Will Lutz, hits that field goal. And then Nick replies, unrelated to another thread that we're in, woohoo. And I am just incensed. For some reason, we were having such a nice conversation. And then it turns out, oh, stupid. Football is so stupid sometimes.
I'm going to be honest, man. The Houston Texans as an organization and as a team don't deserve Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
Like, he was incredible. I mean, for the whole game, but for that final part to get them the lead. And then Bill O'Brien, what the fuck are you doing in a prevent defense when they need to get 6 yards?
Did you guys see him establishing the run with Carlos Hyde, though?
Hey, Carlos Hyde looked freaking good. Don't you?
Yeah, I saw him.
I'm watching the game right now, actually. Carlos Hyde looked good on a couple of his touches, and he looked like he could not outrun me on a few others. I was so frustrated every time he stepped on the field. Actually, you know what? I had some stuff I was going to say about DeAndre Hopkins, but we should move on for Clark's sake.
Receiver in football? Yeah, good point, Nick.
Two drops.
Sorry. Yeah, well, he also had like some fucking preposterous catches. Nick, what game are you talking about? Another one.
All right, let's see here. Number two on the list is Kansas City at Oakland. So Oakland is going to be down at least safety Jonathan Abram. He tore his rotator cuff and something else on tackling Royce Freeman. So that tells you how dangerous Royce Freeman is. But Darian Conley is day-to-day currently with a neck injury. I am not a doctor. I will refer to Dr. David Chow as his reports come out, but that doesn't sound like a recipe for playing this week. Anyway, although we only got, I think it was one target, Mecole Hardman played on 78% of the Chiefs snaps. This game should be a blowout in the Chiefs' favor. I expect Sammy Watkins to be a wide receiver one, but I also expect Mecole Hardman to be setting the pace as just a, you know, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins clone. They drafted this guy thinking that Tyreek Hill wasn't going to play for them when his, you know, audio tape came out. And now that he is out, they're saying that he might only be like that he's day to day after this week or something, but no, every
6 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. That's how long it takes to do this. He had a medical procedure. They didn't cut, but it was a medical procedure to remove his clavicle from his sternum. So anyway, the typical recovery time is 4 to 6 weeks. Hardman should be a baller. He only needs a few targets to, you know, 60 yards and a score. So yeah, go flex Mecole Hardman.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Love the call. He could get two targets and be like the wide receiver 7 this week.
Yeah. I think I saw this and I forget who pointed it out on Twitter too. But I agreed with his point, so I'm going to reiterate it as if it's my own. I feel like Mecole Hardman was neglected on waivers this week, that everyone was directed towards Marquise Brown and towards, you know, John Ross and towards TJ Gronkinson. And rightfully so, those guys were ballers. But I think Mecole Hardman has a chance to just basically be Tyreek Hill again. Like, this offense, I understand they're not the same player, but this offense is so good and you're going up against a defense that's missing key people and is not great, that I think it just, you can plug and play anyone in this offense and they'll get you wide receiver, you know, one production.
That was JJ Zacharyson who made that point. And I think I got him in every league. I got him in a free agent acquisition budget league for $3.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing?
What you doing, people? All right. The second game I'm going to talk about is the Buffalo Bills the Bills staying in New Jersey to take on the Giants. They were just there to play the Jets. How has this ever happened, that like a team plays in the same stadium back to back against different teams? I mean, it can only happen in the Meadowlands, but has a team ever played both teams away back to back? I don't know. Just curious. I'm just, all right, cool. Just asking. Little cool fact.
It probably has with these teams.
Probably. The Giants looked absolutely terrible against the Cowboys. They were giving up big plays all over the place. And yes, we're hoping that a lot of that was Kellen Moore's new sexy offense. But I think a lot of it was also the Giants just being hot freaking garbage. Brown is the Bills' number one receiver, without a doubt, and will feast against this Giants team. I have him on my fantasy team, and I'm so confident in him this week. Pause for dramatic effect. I'm benching Davante Adams for him, because I don't trust Davante Adams going up against Xavier Rhodes. So I'm putting John Brown over him. And I better not be the only one who's doing it this week, you guys, because I was last week. I'm locking John Brown up. Wide receiver 10. He's going to repeat his performance last week. He's going to be a wide receiver 10 or better.
Bold.
I bet you that Davante Adams finishes higher in all formats than John Brown this week.
Xavier Rhodes shut down Julio Jones. And how good did Davante Adams perform against the Bears last week? So, you know.
That's on the table.
All right. Bet's taken.
No, I do love this call. The Bills are going to destroy this Giants team. And I think Josh Allen, I've got him sitting at QB 12. I that's sort of me just hedging. I think he's a quarterback one this week, like, no question.
Yeah, and I know that we've talked about this on the podcast a little bit, but the Bills defense is absolutely the real deal. I know that they didn't exactly dominate the Jets, but I think the Jets are going to be a little bit better than we expected. That was kind of a crazy game. The Bills defense, if it's out on your waiver wire, definitely go grab them. I think they're going to be the kind of one of the surprise squads this year. They have a whole bunch of talent on that side of the ball.
Nice. A little defensive talk. Clark Burns bringing it to the podcast.
Also, Devin Singletary is the running back 1 in Buffalo now. And we talked about him a lot. I was so surprised by the preseason usage. And I mean, even this usage, he only had like 4 touches and finished with 78 yards. He was on the field, I think, for 19 straight snaps before getting a touch. So, and then Frank Gore got 11 carries for 20 yards. I don't understand what they're doing. Anyway, yeah, if you were able to go get Devin Singletary too, good on you.
Shaboy got him. And Shaboy starting him. All right, before we go on to our final three games that we're going to be talking about, we're going to first take a quick ad break. All right, now that we're back from that, Clark, what is the final game that you are looking forward to this week?
I kind of mixed up here and talked about it a little bit already, but I'm looking at the San Francisco 49ers against the Bengals de Cincinnati. I think that the Andy Dalton explosion is real. And if you whiffed on your quarterback and want to stream someone even late in the week, who's probably still available, I think Dalton's a start. I think Mostert, as we talked about earlier, is a start, runs a little tougher than Breida, as much as I hate to say it. And I think a sit for all you hopeless romantics like myself, Tyler Eifert, it may be over.
Yeah, I totally didn't key in that Raheem Mostert is on the 49ers. You're talking about him during the Bucks and Panthers. But good. Hey, man, he gets double runtime and he deserves it because he balled out week one.
That's how much of a start he is.
You should start him in multiple games.
So I'm riding the Bengals train now. Zach Taylor is the real fucking deal. They are passing early and often, meaning first and second down in first half of games. They're using a ton of play action. This offense is going to be better than its personnel just because of the way that their coaches is running it. John Ross had 12 targets. That's not like you can't ignore that. Yeah, it is. Every week starter till AJ Green gets back. He's the alpha there. I don't think Tyler Boyd is now.
Nice. I like it. Nick, do you feel a special allegiance to Zach Taylor because you both don't have K's at the end of your name? You guys end with the C?
Yes.
Cool. Just wanted to check. All right, Nick, without a K, what's the last game you're talking about you're excited for?
Philadelphia at Atlanta. So some stats from Establish the Run and their phenomenal work. DeSean Jackson ran 48% of his routes out of the slot and gained 119 out of 154 yards during those slot routes. He finished with two TDs. He was targeted 10 times, caught 8 balls. He wasn't just running deep routes either. He was running curls. I think that DeSean Jackson might be taking over as the number one receiver in Philadelphia. And I know that that's kind of a hot take. And when I don't have your guys' time to respect tomorrow when I'm doing the live stream, I'm probably going to go number 23 on this and show you that my walls are covered in DeSean Jackson stuff. But I seriously think that this might be a career year for DeSean Jackson. He's just not being used as a pure deep threat. I guess I might liken him to Tyreek Hill or Sammy Watkins in the way that they're moving him around the formation and they're using him as a downfield X receiver. I'm really, really high on DeSean Jackson. Do you guys want to get words in or should I move on to the next guy?
I just want to call out super high on Carson Wentz this year. And because I think the Eagles have a lot of weapons that they're deploying smartly and moving DeSean Jackson around the field is one of those creative things that we're seeing a lot of coaches do with these speedy receivers that you can't touch anymore. So I think that's a great call that DeSean Jackson, I don't think is the boom bust player that we were led to believe. Obviously everybody's going to have some down game, but I think DeSean Jackson is a starter all season.
Yeah. It blows my mind. I mean, Ted Ginn is kind of this way too, but it blows my mind that DeSean Jackson can still outrun 20-year-olds, like the fastest 20-year-olds, and can still just like blow by them with ease at like 32 years old.
Dude, he's smoking them. And so Jackson was the guy that we were talking about earlier with the revenge game stuff. Evan Silva actually went back and looked up all of his revenge games because he's had like 8 because he's been on a bunch of different teams. He goes over 100 yards. I think it was in 4 of 7 games he's gone over 100. Anyway, DeSean Jackson's amazing. The other guy that I want to talk about, though, of course, is Miles Sanders. Per Mike Clay, Sanders had 36 snaps. Jordan Howard and Darren Sproles combined for 36 snaps. Sanders finished the day 11 carries, 25 yards, caught 1 of 2 targets for 2 yards. However, he had a 21-yard touchdown called back after a holding call by J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. We're looking at a much different we're having a different conversation if he finished the day with 48 yards and a touchdown. That's not a blowing up the box score, but that's not irrelevant either, and the snaps were there. What is the rule when a team is playing the Atlanta Falcons? You start their running backs. The Dan Quinn defense schemes to allow passes into the flats because they just want to stop the deep ball. Every running back in the history of time who's played Dan Quinn's Falcons goes off as long as he can catch the ball, and Miles Sanders can do that. So I am my bold thing is this week Pete, comparing to your Adams, John Brown call is whether or not I recommend to someone to bench Aaron Jones to start Matt Breida and Miles Sanders.
I would vote yes. I mean, we saw how good Dalvin Cook was against the Falcons run defense. I mean, Cook looked amazing. And I don't see why you couldn't expect Miles Sanders to have similar success, especially since the Eagles offensive line is leagues better than the Vikings offensive line.
Clark, you in or not? Miles?
That I like Miles Sanders against the Falcons? Yeah, I think that's a really good call.
All right.
Cool.
Everybody's simpatico on this week's pod. I like it.
I know. We need something spicy. We need to really spice this up. Well, we're getting to the Jacksonville Jaguars, Clark. Even though
those are spicy. I like them.
This is crazy. Wow. Is it because their defense is now hot garbage?
No. So I'm in a bit of a crisis of conscience here. I've always hated the Jaguars. Sometimes for no reason and sometimes because they are eminently hateable. But over the past week, I've gotten to know Gardner Minshew a little bit.
Oh, and tell me.
Damn it, if I am not on board with this guy leading the Jaguars to second place in the division. I just want to know more about this man. He seems fun, self-deprecating, and not in a stupid, like, I've been told this is funny way. I really like this guy.
I'm 100% sold on him too, and that's why I wanted to take this game, because I'm telling you, start DJ Chark this week, baby. I'm buying the mustache of Gardner Minshew, and Chark balled with him against the Chiefs, and I expect the Texans and Jags to be a shootout, and if they can keep Watson upright. But like, this is going to be a air it out game. We saw that the Saints had success with Ted Ginn airing it out against this Texans defense. And I would expect Chark to play a similar gig against them and have maybe similar success. I think Minshew, man, this guy seems legit.
I think it was John Daigle today also talking about Minshew in college. He was ready to transfer to Alabama to basically just like be a backup on the roster. But he wanted to transition into coaching. And so his plan was to just sort of like exist on the roster, but work as an assistant coach and just move into coaching. And then Mike Leach was like, yo, you're going to be my fucking quarterback and you're going to set a bunch of records. I think that's what he did. Anyway, just draft Mike Leach's quarterbacks, man. They're fucking ready.
No, I heard the exact same thing. I heard people talking about that too. It was Chris Wessling of the Round the NFL podcast who was talking about that, how he is just like a student of the game and comes in. He looked completely comfortable coming in against, albeit a lackadaisical Chiefs defense, but still like didn't have any kind of stage fright. We'll see what the season holds, but if at the end of this year, Gardner Minshew is their starting quarterback and they're like, well, we just kind of lucked into this, I would not be surprised. I would be surprised if he starts for them next year.
Or if he just plays like 3 good games out of 9, he'll be a backup in the NFL for like the next decade. And I want that to happen.
Plus, coming into the league with a dope-ass mustache is so much cooler than Baker being like, oh, rookie of the year, I'm going to grow a mustache to be cool. Sorry, Baker, I love you, man, but come on. You can't do that. You got to come into the league. The people got to get to know you with the stash for it to be cool.
Minshew might be our replacement for Ryan Fitzpatrick.
And that's why you start DJ Chark, baby, because Ryan Fitzpatrick's gonna throw bombs like a motherfucker. Cool, awesome. Well, so there you go. Week two starts and sits, and a little Minshew love. God damn, man, we do love our young quarterbacks on this podcast. Oh, that just sounded terrible. Ugh. We love quarterbacks who have early NFL careers. There we go. Much better.
Close it out, Pete.
All right, before we go, let us give our picks for Thursday Night Football. Bucks versus Panthers. Clark, who's winning this game?
Oh, I feel like the Panthers is the...
I'm just curious to see how daring you would get.
Panthers.
Yeah, it's got to be the Panthers. I mean, we spent all offseason hyping up this offense, and if this offense doesn't come to play against this Bucks defense, then, then we look stupid, and we can't have that now, can we?
But I am interested to see. So the Tampa Bay front seven really did a number on San Francisco's running game. San Francisco broke off a couple of big runs, but Kyle Shanahan is amazing at just moving the football and putting his players in situations to win. And the Buccaneers did a really good job of shutting down the run. So I think against the Panthers, who we know can run and who we know have an incredibly talented running back, if they can hold McCaffrey to like 120 or 130 all-purpose yards, I think that'll be – we may start to realize that maybe Tampa Bay's defensive line and front seven are actually good.
I mean, they've invested a ton into it. I mean, so it would like be nice from a team development standpoint that the amount of first-rounders you put into that front seven finally actually pay off. But they did – Tevin Coleman got them twice in the passing game for, I think, 30-plus yards. So there's, you know, there's still some room there for Christian McCaffrey to feast and for him to get his thousand yards that I called perfectly so that it is only me who deserves credit when that happens. Let the record show, only me who gets credit for that. Just excellent. Make sure to subscribe to the Fake Teams podcast channel on wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, whole nine yards. Give us 5 stars. Leave us a nice review. Tell us what you're excited to see in week 2. And follow us on Twitter at RB1 Podcast. Follow myself at PM Rogers. Follow Clark at NFL Clark. Follow Nick at Nick at Ginger _ Nick without a K. There it is. We'll be back next week. Until then, peace.